Hi, my name's Russell Norman, and this is a podcast called Read Lots, Write Lots, a podcast for those who love to write. This episode is the next in our holiday series where we feature short stories from people who we have interviewed on the podcast. However, in this episode, I'll be reading a story written by Jamie Gregory, who we are scheduled to interview in a couple of weeks' time. Jamie is a relatively newcomer to Readsy Prompt's short story website, having joined in November 2021. Since then, she has submitted four stories, and today we're going to read her personal favourite, which she wrote in response to the prompt. Start your story looking down from a stage. It's called Debut Under the Big Top. I stood there with my feet planted on the small wooden platform 20 feet above the ring and the surrounding crowd. My sweaty, shaky hands gripped the rail beside me in an attempt to steady my trembling body. I looked down, but only with my eyes, since I was too afraid to move my head. The ringmaster pranced into the centre of the ring to introduce the next act, my act. This time yesterday, I was trudging home from the coal mine, covered head to toe in soot, and praying that my days working there were numbered. For the past year, those prayers had gone unanswered. "Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?" the ringmaster said. "At this time, I introduce you to our next death-defying act with trepidation. Sadly, our tightrope walker sustained an injury during his last performance, which put us in quite a bind. But as luck would have it, we were introduced to a young lad from right here in Collinsville this morning who is a self-taught tightrope walker and aspiring circus performer. You are about to witness his debut performance of this spectacular stunt." There was an audible gasp and subsequent murmur from the crowd. Following on from what I'm sure will be a thunderous round of applause, please remain silent to allow him the utmost level of concentration. Now put your hands together for John Turner. As predicted, there was an uproar of applause from the crowd, which came to a sudden halt when the ringmaster shushed them. I could feel the weight of 1,000 eyes on me, waiting with anticipation. Besides the occasional ruckus from the menagerie tent, the atmosphere was thick with silence. You could slice through it with a horsewhip. I was vaguely aware of the ringmaster announcing my name and the fact that I should be doing something. My body was frozen, paralyzed by fear. My mind, on the other hand, was racing. Circuses stopped in Collinsville, Pennsylvania regularly to draw on the local mining population. It was practically the only form of entertainment in these parts. I would never forget the first time my parents took me to the circus. I was 8 years old and was completely enamored by how extraordinary it was. It felt as though I was being transported to another planet full of exotic animals and magnificent performers. Ever since that night, I've been dreaming of running away to the circus. "This isn't what I had in mind, though. I'm not cut out for this," I thought. Of course, I fantasized about becoming a famous performer. In reality, I was simply hoping to obtain a manual labor position with a circus like my enviable cousin William. But 1 year ago, the trajectory of my life changed like a weather vane shifting with the wind. My father left to fight in the Spanish-American War and never came home again, leaving my mother and 7 children, of which I am the oldest. My mother decided that, at 13 years old, I had received an adequate education and it was time for me to replace my father as the man of the family. When tragedy strikes, father time doesn't put the universe on hold to give us a chance to cope with our trials. When the fog of my father's death lifted, I found myself deep in a coal mine, battering my grief with one deliberate swing of the pickaxe at a time. A baby wailing in the crowd snapped my mind from the coal mines back to the big top and the task before me. If I close my eyes, I can just imagine that I'm back home balancing on the railroad track or walking along my makeshift tightrope in the barn. I had only attempted my homemade tightrope twice. It stretched the width of the barn from one hayloft to the other. On my first attempt, I fell and landed squarely on a straw bale stacked on the ground. I wasn't quite so lucky on the second attempt and ended up with a broken leg to show for it. Okay, maybe I won't close my eyes. The ringmaster suddenly cleared his throat and announced my name again while trying to conceal his frustration. I glanced down one last time before I took the first tentative step onto the tightrope. The last thing I saw was my cousin William standing near a large wooden wagon along the side of the ring. He gave me a knowing head nod, and it was just enough to make me think perhaps I could pull this off. I considered the long balancing pole leaning against the rail next to me. I've never used a balancing pole at home, but maybe I should have. I grabbed the pole with my sweaty palms and shifted my gaze to the wire stretching away from me. Like sunlight kissing a rain puddle, the wire glistened in the radiance of the state-of-the-art electric spotlights positioned around the big top. I took a deep breath like I do when Mama has a loaf of homemade bread baking in the oven. I slid my right foot out onto the wire and rotated the balancing pole into a horizontal position, holding it close to my abdomen. My left foot stretched and landed in front of my right in a swift yet calculated movement. Wobbling slightly, I paused to get my bearings. If Papa was here, he'd say, "Johnny, it's so quiet in here, you could hear a mouse fart." I chuckled aloud and almost lost my concentration. Another deep breath. Right foot. Stretch. And settle. Inhale. Exhale. Left foot. Extend. Touch down. I eased into a rhythm and suddenly I was quarter of the way across the tightrope. "I'm doing this. I'm actually doing..." The trumpeting of an elephant blasted abruptly from the menagerie tent. I nearly lost my footing. I bent forward at the waist, trying to achieve a lower center of gravity. My body jerked from side to side, wrestling with the balance pole and doing everything in my power to remain upright. The crowd erupted with more gasps and a few shrieks. "That's not helping," I thought with gritted teeth. By nothing short of a miracle, I recovered my balance. By the time I reached the halfway point along the tightrope, my confidence was growing. But apparently, at that moment, I should have remembered one of Papa's other catchphrases. "Don't celebrate too early. Just because your horse is in first place doesn't mean he's going to finish that way." Because that was the moment I felt a tingling sensation inside my nose. "Damn if I'm going to have to sneeze. It must be all that sawdust in here. It always gets me in the barn." A gust of air flew out from my nose like a runaway freight train. There was no stopping it. I lost my grip on the balancing pole and it fell by the wayside. My knees buckled and I collapsed clumsily onto the wire, then tripped sideways and went overboard like a drunken sailor. One minute I was standing tall and proud, living out a daydream that I had no business dabbling in. Now, in the blinking of an eye, or the sneeze of a nose rather, I was tumbling 20 feet to the ground and my presumable death. I was surrounded by a cacophony of sounds, people screaming, animals protesting, and suddenly chaos. My body was trapped in an uncontrollable tumbling tailspin. Various sights zipped through my topsy-turvy field of vision. Frantic crowds, defiant elephants, glaring spotlights, canvas ceilings, sawdust-covered ground. Fleeting, panic-stricken thoughts competed for attention in my mind. "Am I going to die? Oh my God, I'm going to die. What will Mama do without me? How can I be so stupid? Will I see Papa again?" I was rapidly approaching the ground, unable to brace for impact when I was briefly enveloped in something soft before colliding with something solid. I entered a void where all light and sound dissipated. After an indiscernible amount of time, I was aroused by a soft material shifting around me. As it tickled my skin, I gradually regained my sense of hearing, albeit muffled at first. Someone was shouting frantically, "Johnny, Johnny, can you hear me?" Suddenly, a pair of hands made contact with my body and jerked me out of the abyss by my armpits. My head lolled from side to side as I wheezed and coughed, spewing sawdust from my mouth. I attempted to rub the sawdust out of my desiccated eyes to identify the saviour standing before me. "William? Is that you, William?" I said, just barely making out my cousin's face through the blurred vision. The ringmaster suddenly stepped between us and said, "Give the crowd a bow, you idiot. I want to talk to you both after the show." He stepped aside and William steadied me for a second to make sure I could stand on my own. Standing inside the large wooden wagon full of sawdust, I gave a defeated bow. William had resourcefully pushed the wagon across the ring to catch me just in the nick of time. The crowd went wild, exploding from their seats into a boisterous standing ovation. I collapsed into the wagon once again with a plume of sawdust rising around me. William wheeled me out of the big top, waving at the cheering crowds with a grin on his face, relishing his own moment of fame. When the ringmaster found us after the show had ended, we were waiting to be scolded like dogs with our tails between our legs.
"I'm sorry, sir. I never should have tried to," I said.
William interrupted me. "Sir, I apologize for leading you to believe that Johnny had more experience. I'll accept whatever punishment."
"Shut up, both of you. That act was brilliant. First, you had the crowd on the edge of their seats. Then they thought they'd witnessed your death. They loved it. Suspense, danger, bravery. And William, an animal caretaker, a nobody, rushing in to save you with his wagon? Just brilliant. You stole the show,"
the ringmaster said vehemently. William and I were now speechless, exchanging glances. "So you two knuckleheads are going to repeat that act in exactly the same way at every show from now on. Johnny, you'll pretend that you're a local resident from whatever town we're in on a given day. Understood?" William and I nodded earnestly in unison. Show after show, town after town, I lived this lie and survived the same near-death fall countless times. Ironically, after walking half the length of the tightrope so many times, I'd actually become a very skilled performer, yet I was forced to stay incognito. I got my wish to run away with the circus, and it was simultaneously everything I'd hoped it would be and nothing I'd hoped it would be. My name will never adorn a circus poster as a star performer, but I've learnt that my impact on audiences is beyond measure. I exemplify the ability of an average human to climb out of the darkest chasm of life and rise victorious over adversity. I trust you've enjoyed Jamie Gregory's story, and you can catch her interview with Deidre and myself in a couple of episodes' time. Coming up in the next episode, we'll be talking with John Adams, who lives in California and, amongst other things, is involved in storiography. If you don't know what that is, you're not alone. I had to look it up too. Storiography is a collection of stories people tell about a place, an experience, or time that has touched their lives. These stories become part of their personal and institutional sagas and, in a very real way, defines who they are. So really looking forward to talking with John. Well, that's it for this episode. So on behalf of Deidre and myself, thanks so much for listening, and bye for now.